Hello and welcome back to the Smoke and Steak podcast. This is episode 87 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. You've got your hosts tonight, Peter and Enric, back, the dynamic duo. No guests this week, but we've got a lot to cover. State championships are rolling right around. We're into the knockout phases now, or approaching the first weekend of those. We've got Copa do Brasil, and of course, we've got Copa Libertadores, which was incredibly exciting. We had an all-Brazilian fixture there. Botafogo versus Red Bull Bragantino. Big names, big news all over Brazil. But before we get to that, let's go ahead and say hi to Enric, the other host of this pod. Enric, what's going on, man?
Nothing crazy, man. It's been a great day, a great weekend. And of course, we got so many Brazilian matches. Not Brasil, it hasn't started yet. Paulistas, all the state championships have almost come to an end. Now we're in the big stage where the knockout matches are taking place. So it's great to be there. We got so many games, as you mentioned, Copa Libertadores, Sudamericana, Copa do Brasil. And yeah, it's getting very entertaining as time passes by.
Yeah, it's my mind's spinning with all these different competitions. We didn't even mention Copa Verde, some of the regional tournaments as well. So it's pretty crazy. And yeah, the rest of the route is just around the corner, or just about a month out, which is crazy. It's just madness. But let's start off with the national team, Seleção. Just a quick little update here, because I think it's an important moment for the rest of the route. Ederson, you may have seen at the big City and Liverpool game, went down with an injury. Marquinhos and Martinelli also injured. So Leo Jardim from Vasco comes in. Fabricio Bruno from Flamengo comes in. And Galeno from Porto come in. Those two players from the Brasileirão make the total of 9 players in the national team from the Brazilian league. The biggest contingent of all the leagues, including the Prem. And this hasn't happened, I don't think, since the early 2000s, I want to say, maybe even late 90s, that the biggest chunk of the national team is being coming from the Brasileirão. So it's a big moment for the league. I think you've seen huge names go to the league. The quality is up. It's so entertaining. And I think this is such an exciting time to be a fan of the Brasileirão and Brazilian football in general. So it's great to see this little reward for the Seleção players that are coming from the Brasileirão. And it's just a great honor to get your name called and don that canary and yellow or canary and green kit with the blue shorts, even if you're going to be sitting on the bench, and especially against teams like England and Spain. So great honor for that. And I think it's an important moment for the league. All right, Enric, let's dive into Copa Libertadores. Huge clash here. Probably worthy of a group stage, maybe even round of 16, but we're still in the qualifiers. Second stage, Botafogo get matched up with Red Bull Bragantino. Botafogo rolled over Aguias Dourados, the Golden Eagles of Colombia, and then smashed Aurora from Bolivia. And this one had a lot of hype over the two legs. How are you looking at this? How important do you think this fixture was for both sides?
For both sides, it was very important, but I think even more so for Botafogo, of course, by looking at what happened last season of them not being able to reach top four and choking their last match in the Brasileirão to qualify directly for Libertadores. I feel like for Botafogo, it meant much more than for Red Bull Bragantino, who, of course, were in Sudamericana last year. They should have at least reached the final and maybe won it, but they didn't. So now they have another chance. But yeah, Botafogo playing very convincingly, maybe not in that first match when they played Aurora and tied 1-1 away from home, conceding as always a late 99th minute goal by the home side. But then when it was for the time for the second leg, they absolutely smashed their opponent starting in the third minute and throughout that first half. Junior Santos, a man that maybe we haven't mentioned really in the last season. This year for Botafogo, he's been simply impressive. Seven goals so far and eight after the second leg against the Red Bull Bragantino in only four matches, I believe. So he's been an absolute fire. And Red Bull Bragantino on the other side, they, of course, would feel bad for not qualifying to the next stage. But when you look at the match that you mentioned earlier against Dorados of Colombia, they tied both legs home and away, and both of those games ended scoreless. They were lucky to qualify through penalty kicks, winning 4-3. And even in that game against Botafogo, especially the second leg, when I believe they lost 1-0, they had a game that maybe they thought they would be winning. Botafogo conceded a red card, so they had plenty of time to score, and they got punished for it. The aggregate scoreline became 3-1, and it got even harder and harder. So at the end of the day, Botafogo reached the Libertadores stage. I'm sure that all the fans, and including their president, John Textor, they're all going to be happy, because this is one of the main goals of buying the club and making the fans happy. So hopefully, in entertaining things come in the future, and with the draw coming up on Monday, hopefully they get in a group they can qualify for the knockout stages.
Yeah, and just a little correction there. I did say that Aguias Dorados played Botafogo. That's my bad. I misread the two legs there, and they did just get defeated by Red Bull on the pen. So thanks for catching that, Enric. But yeah, I think you said a lot there, and you said the most important part, which was Junior Santos is just on fire. Just insane amount of goals for this stage in the competition. The first goal in the first game was just an individual brilliance. And the second one, Enric, I don't know if you remember that one. It was craziness. I mean, it was kind of like Richarlison against Serbia. The ball kind of he let the ball roll up on him and fling up in the air into an acrobatic scissor kick. Just absolutely beautiful. And then, of course, he adds insult to injury, a man down in the second game against Red Bull. Red Bull dominating. They go a man up. And Junior Santos, again, I think Chiquinho flipped the ball on with his head. Another player played to the whistle, which I want to zero in on here in a second. But then squared it to Junior Santos. Another goal. His eighth in the tournament so far. It's just ridiculous for four matches. Yeah, what do you think of Junior Santos right now? I mean, he's got to be feeling on top of the world.
Yeah, he is, and he's been saving this team so far. If it wasn't for him and his goals, Botafogo would have been out of the Libertadores ever since the first stage. They would have lost on aggregate to Aurora. And if they did not manage to make it to the Libertadores, imagine if Botafogo would have ended up in the Sudamericana just like last season. And imagine Junior Santos ending up with eight goals. He would have surely... Imagine if he went on to win Sudamericana and be the top goal scorer for Libertadores with eight goals. Because when you look at 2023, Herman Cano for Fluminense had 13. Of course, that's five goals more. But in the second place, Paulinho, Atlético Mineiro, he only had seven. So if at worst, Junior Santos would have been second. And as one of our friends said in the recent podcast, Marcelo Ferrantini, there's things that only happened to Botafogo. This was be like one of the biggest and funniest one, having the team win this Europa League of South America and one of your players be the top goal scorers of the Champions League. Simply insane. But thankfully, it didn't happen. And Junior Santos now has a chance to extend that goal average and probably win it at the end of this tournament.
Yeah, he's putting himself in a good position for that golden boot of Libertadores. And yeah, you always see like, you know, some random guy from a lower team that has, you know, a bunch of goals in some of the earlier rounds. And then you know that team's getting booted before the serious end of the competition. You see that quite a bit. Champions League, you'd think, you know, the teams that have to go through all those qualifying rounds. So it is kind of interesting to see. But yeah, I want to go back to the first goal for Botafogo in the second leg. The Botafogo player seems to kind of, they come together with the Red Bull defender and the Red Bull defender goes down. And even the commentators were saying that it was, I think it was John Cotterell. I could be wrong though, that, 90% of the time, 80, 90% of the time, that's called in Brazil a foul and the play stops. The whistle did not blow. They played on and it was the easy square of the ball and it was in the back of the net. And it may have cost Red Bull Bragantino a spot in Libertadores. So, with that being said, of course, the message is play to the whistle. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. I thought Red Bull Bragantino, especially in that second leg, were much, much better and looked dangerous. Lincoln looks good, which our buddy Bruno from So Rare Brazil. .com joined us for a transfer episode last episode, so check that out if you haven't. But he said that could have been one of the underrated signings. And yeah, I thought Red Bull looked good, and I think they are probably up there with Inter Internacional for the best side in Sudamericana. Boca Juniors, of course, there this year as well. So that'll be interesting. But like you said, Enric, the group stage draw Monday, the 18th. So that'll be interesting. And I'm hoping Botafogo is a fun team we can watch. I mean, they're a little bit all over the place. You don't really know what you're gonna get, but you've got lots of quality and I think they're gonna be fun in Libertadores.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I saw the pots 1 through 4 of teams, where they're placed and who they can have in the group stage. I'm sure that 6 of them from the 8 belong in the first pot, all Brazilian teams. And well, the only one outside of those 4 is Botafogo, actually sitting in that 4th spot. So I believe 7 Brazilian teams are making it to Libertadores. And if there is anything that I wish for, is that all those teams, all those Brazilian teams, not to be in the same group as with each other. We saw that last year when Atlético Paranaense and Atlético Mineiro were in the same group. I didn't really like that because it reduces the chances of Brazilian teams advancing because they beat one another, and then another team like Racing has an opportunity to advance ahead of Brazilians. And if there is any Brazilian duels, I want to see that in the round of 16, not in the group stage. So hopefully we don't see Botafogo in a crazy group with like Fluminense or Flamengo. And yeah, hopefully they can advance to the knockout stages and maybe win it all. Who knows?
Who knows? That's the beauty of this Botafogo team. You don't know. We thought we knew last year, and we just didn't. All right, so that's Libertadores done. Let's move it on to the state leagues. The big two leagues, Paulista, Carioca, different stages. We just wrapped up the last group stage game from the Campeonato Paulista. Some things went as expected. Other things got out of hand and were very dramatic. But Enric, let's start with the expect what we expected. Palmeiras cleaning up, finishing top of the league, top of the group, and topping off their group stage campaign with a win over Botafogo. Pretty easy. But the main story here is your boy's back. Rony is back with a goal, giving them the win. What do you think of Palmeiras here in this one, and really their campaign in the Paulista in general?
I can't wait for Ronnie to leave Palmeiras so that hopefully you won't be calling him my boy. He's never been my for an opposite team. So glad to see him score though. It's only his 3rd goal in 2024, and I'm not sure if this is concerning or not, looking at how the man performed in 2023 and 2022. Of course, it seems like ever since that Seleção call up in last February, he's not been the same as before. And I feel like Palmeiras, if he doesn't continue and give the team the goals that he used to, he's going to be sold to a team like Atlético Paranaense, like what happened to Vidal with Flamengo, a lower tier team, or maybe a team where he came from, the Paranaense team. So overall, Palmeiras finished undefeated. Good for them. 8 wins, 4 draws in 12 matches. They finished top of the group. And when you look at Group B, where they're located, Ponte Preta makes it to the knockout stages. They end up second ahead of Agua Santa, so we don't have a chance of watching the final of last season's Palmeiras Agua Santa. Now it's Ponte Preta, who many people said they are a bad team. They are a team that won't be able to win much. Of course, we saw that against Santos, but then when they played teams like Corinthians, they won 1-0. So Ponte Preta are actually doing very good, given that not too long ago they were fighting to stay in second division. So good for them, and hopefully they can take this opportunity and beat Palmeiras in the quarterfinals.
All right, yeah, and I think you covered it there. Palmeiras are good. We know this. I would expect them to roll over Ponte Preta, but let's see. Santos, you mentioned showing some backbone here, playing their final group stage match against Inter de Limeira, a team I think that has suffered a lot with mentality issues. We've talked about it a ton here. We even saw them slipping a bit in this tournament after they had already qualified. But they show some good steel here, closing this phase off with a win, a come from behind win, and a late winner, actually, no less. So pretty good showing from Santos. I thought the defense is still a big issue here, but I think let's just get into these knockout phases and let's really see what they're made of. So they get the win, and they'll play a very historic club, Portuguesa, in the next round with a very familiar face.
Yeah, a familiar face that played for Santos in the near Neymar era around 2012. We've talked about him in the podcast before. Victor Andrade returns to the Villa in that quarterfinal match between Santos and Portuguesa. Going back to the Santos game against Inter de Limeira, as you said, Peter, Santos was doubtful in defense, and they were able to turn things around in the second half, which, with the help of Julio Furch, finally he's been able to get some score or some goals, just like Alfredo Morelos. He scored twice, one of them coming with the penalty kick, and then the late winner by Julio Cazares in the 84th gave us the 3 points, which we didn't really need. They helped us end up second in the overall table of the Paulista. But Santos has one draw and three defeats in this competition, two of them coming in the last five matches. And it's understandable for the team to get those results when you have already secured promotion to the knockout stages. But hopefully the team doesn't perform how we played those last couple of matches. I want to see a Santos that played in the first 2 or 3 weeks of Paulista, like we did against Botafogo, Sao Paulo, Agua Santa, Sao Paulo, Corinthians, all of those matches that we were able to win. Hopefully we get to see that when we play Portuguesa and Palmeiras, as I said earlier, in the semifinals. Going back to Vitor Andrade, he actually had an interview with Globo, and he was talking about his time when he was at Santos. He said that many people used to judge him, that he was only a 16-year-old and not doing things well. And he said that even the manager didn't give him much trust, the manager who we won the Copa Libertadores with, Marci Ramulho or something like that. So it's sad that his time at Santos ended early. We would have loved to see him more play for the team, and who knows, maybe he would have been at Santos even nowadays if it wasn't for those problems. But hopefully he scores a goal, because of course Santos is capable of getting 2 or 3, and I want to see Victor Andrade perform well in the Villa Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, if they're predestined to score a goal, I guess we could say, I guess it's not a bad thing if it's him. I hope they don't score. I don't think they will either. Portuguesa, by far the worst team advancing, and a lot of criticism is being leveled at the Paulista, the way they do it. Portuguesa only 10 points, 3 wins, 1 draw, and 8 losses. They're in 13th place in the overall table out of 16 teams. So, you know, they're progressing over teams like Botafogo, Marisao, Corinthians, Agua Santa, and even Sao Bernardo with 21 points. So some criticisms there of the structure of the competition, but good news for Santos fans. And speaking of Sao Bernardo, they almost did progress despite Sao Paulo's implosion. but Sao Paulo battled back in probably one of the most exciting games and most exciting moments of the tournament so far. Lots of drama with this one. And Enric, I wanna say this to you because I know you're not the biggest Ituano fan. In fact, you bought a jersey and that you didn't like so much that you gave it to me. I think it was more of a sizing issue, but you definitely don't like the team. Ituano always seemed to be involved in the dramatics. You remember 2 years ago, Serie B, the last match day, it was them or Vasco. Vasco goes out. Last year, I think Santos may have still had something on the line, maybe not. They smacked Santos last day of the game or last day of the competition, 3-0. And here they're doing their best. They're down 2-1 to Sao Paulo. But then what happens? Sao Bernardo scored to take the lead in their game, bumping Sao Paulo down to third place in the group. Ituano come back, compound Sao Paulo's misery by drawing them with a late goal in the 89th minute. All seems lost, but then who comes back? The hero. He left Sao Paulo to go to Europe. He comes back. Lucas Moura steps up to the penalty spot, scores, gives Sao Paulo the 3-2 win, and they end up going top, beating Novo Horizontino on goal difference. 22 points apiece. Sao Bernardo just missing out. 21 points there. Crazy group, crazy match, and really an exciting phase or exciting end to this phase for these teams involved. Enric, give us your take on this group, this match, and maybe why you hate Ituano so much.
Well, Ituano, a team, as you said, that causes a lot of trouble. And I mentioned that last time we did a normal podcast together, I said Sao Paulo needs to watch out because this is what Ituano does. And if they don't focus, they're going to end up outside of that top two and get promoted to the next stage. And that's exactly what happened. They scored first. Ituano gave signs that they're going to be dangerous by scoring in that first half. Luciano actually took the lead. And then out of nowhere, I was watching that last 5 or 6 minutes of the game between Ituano and Sao Paulo. Sao Paulo had absolute control, and then one little mistake, Ituano profit from it, and they score an absolute banger. And if you ask me about that third penalty kick goal by Sao Paulo, it was not deserved. I feel like the contact in box was very little, and maybe there's a feel of the referee is thinking, wait, one of the big teams is actually not making it to the next stage. And even when they look at it on the VAR, they're probably thinking in their head that if they don't give this penalty, Sao Paulo's out. So what do? They give the penalty to them. Not that it wasn't deserved, but it wasn't, how do I say it, convincing. So again, Sao Paulo gets saved by that penalty kick. They score it with Lucas Moura, who actually earns a pen, and they make it to the next stage. Next up, we got Sao Paulo and Novo Horizontino. This is going to be a great matchup, but if Sao Paulo hasn't learned, and Jago Capini, if he hasn't learned from the mistakes that the team has been going through this season, 12 matches, winning only 50% of those games, the other 50 drew 4 and lost 2, they need to focus because Novo Horizontino is a troubling team. They caused trouble to Santos by winning, I believe, 2-1. Was it 2-1 or something like that? Or maybe we won 2-1. I'm not sure. I just know we lost one of those. Yeah, we lost 2-1, and we beat Sao Bernardo. So things won't be looking too well if Sao Paulo doesn't take this in full consideration and be able to come victorious in that match.
Yeah, especially when you look at the way Sao Paulo have played. They've got a great squad, but I think they are not in top gear. And you saw them kind of stumble and fumble with Ituano. Could be the same thing in the first match, in the first tie. so they will play Novo Horizontino. The last group, Red Bull Bragantino, actually dropped their last match, Guarani. Just the one goal in it. But you'd expect them to progress there, and I think that Inter could give them some trouble, but as you saw with the Santos match, but I think they're much more stable on the back end, and I think they'll get through pretty easily. We kind of covered the overall table, you know, some of the controversies as far as the structure of who actually gets through, Enric. So I don't know if you have any other comments on that, but I think that it's fine the way it is. I understand why people are mad, but typically this isn't really an issue as far as Portuguese advancing from the 13th spot.
Yeah, well, you look at the points that Portuguesa actually got, 13, and then qualified for the next stage ahead of São Bernardo. São Bernardo had 21 points, so Portuguesa doesn't even have 50% of the points that São Bernardo gathered. And I'm not sure if you're a fan of this split table system. I don't think you are, and we talked about this actually last year as well. We mentioned that looking back at the Paulista's history, like 2016, 2014, teams like Mogi Mirim, they finished second, and it was actually fun to see the overall table. And even if that's the thing, I would be totally okay right now if it's the end of the competition and Palmeiras is victorious. It just feels like an absolute achievement of finishing second when you look at that table. And Palmeiras, of course, they're probably going to win it anyways, so I don't think we're capable of getting a result against them. But why not let the competition be over right now? Everything's done. It's March 15th, and give the players a month freedom to prepare for that Brasileirão that is about to start in the mid-April. So they need some vacation. They need some time off. It's not about always watching soccer. As fans, we can always find a game that is played, whether it's Copa Verde, Copa do Nordeste. But I feel like extending the state championships for so long is one of the reasons why teams in the Brasileirão don't perform that well. You look at champions, even Palmeiras, they might win the Brasileirão, but they draw, for example, 10 matches and they lose 8 more. So what's the point of that when teams aren't able to give their fullest when it comes to the biggest and most important championships in the country? Both of Santos Group's team, Santo André and Ituano, get relegated. And for the first time, we get to have that advancement to the next stage ahead of time and not be able to fight like we did in the past 2 or 3 years until the very end of the competition. So maybe that's one of the benefits of not having Red Bull Bragantino in the same group as us for 3 consecutive years. So yeah, it's been a great competition, and no matter who wins it, it's definitely going to be a great tournament, and a tournament that Santos has been progressing so much compared to how they did in the past.
Yeah, I'm definitely not against reforming the competition, but I don't know. I like the knockout phases. I think, you know, it's a complicated issue that we don't need to go into, but I wouldn't want to have just a straight 12 match group. What's the difference between that and the league? You know, that's my thinking. But anyways, we spent too much time on Paulista. Let's move to Rio. Campeonato Carioca in full swing, semifinals in full swing. We had the first leg last week. We're having the second leg tomorrow and Sunday. We have the Taça Rio semifinals going on here. Portuguesa, Boa Vista, Botafogo winning against Sampaio Correa. Don't know if you want to zero in on this one for obvious reasons. I guess Botafogo, really, the main story is their two kids scoring late goals to give them the win. But the Campeonato Carioca playoffs were underway as well. Fluminense, Flamengo, and Vasco facing Nova Iguaçu. And I think, Enric, let's start with Fla-Flu, or in this case, Flu-Fla, because this was a very highly tense game. The buildup was very tense and intense. I think a lot was expected of this game, and I think pretty much the consensus to anyone who watched the game, looked at the stats, even watched the highlights, is this was really a one-sided game here. Chichi's Flamengo absolutely running circles around Fluminense.
Yeah, Tite seems like he has everything in control, and it seemed like that ever since he took control of Flamengo last season with a convincing win back in the time against Cruzeiro. So they've been looking very good in this Campeonato Paulista or Campeonato Carioca. We mentioned this a little bit when we interviewed Bruno, the Sorare guy. And Flamengo, a team that has only conceded one in this Carioca, and the team that they conceded to was Nova Iguaçu, currently in the semifinals that played Vasco da Gama. In this match, a Fluminense side that struggled. That's what we saw throughout the whole 90 minutes. There were two quick goals by the end of each half that saw Ruben Negros with one foot to the final. And no matter what, I don't think we're going to see a turnaround like we saw last season when Fluminense was able to win 3 or 4-1 in the second leg and be able to be champions. That's not going to happen. I feel like Fluminense has won enough in those last 3 or 4 months, the Libertadores and then the Recopa. And they're probably going to be happy with that throughout the rest of the season. They're not going to aim for too much. Flamengo as well, they, as I said, look very good. When you mentioned the call-ups that are about to substitute the goalkeeping positions for Brazil, you said Leo Jardim, and I was about to say, what about Flamengo? Look at the goalkeepers that they have, but the goalkeeper that has been performing so well and not conceded goals, he's not Brazilian, he's from Argentina. So that's one of the reasons why he's not there. But Nova Iguaçu as well, they tie away from home against Vasco da Gama, and they seemed like they were about to get a win until the 82nd minute when Lucas Piton equalized. Both teams got a red card at the end. So great result away from home from Nova Iguaçu, but can they hold on and get the job done in the return leg, Peter? I don't think so. I feel like Vasco da Gama with the players that they have, Dimitri Payet is going to make the impossible possible and be able to advance to the final. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I would expect that. I mean, Novo Iguaçu has been a great story. Carlinhos is a great player for them this year. Bill, I think, is another player who's earned the right. I think I was looking at some stats the other day. He's got the most dribbles of all the players in the Carioca. I think he's really done a lot for his personal self and his career. But yeah, I think Vasco are too strong. It surprised me actually how well Novo Iguaçu handled them, especially going ahead in the 50th minute. But I think over the two legs, you'd expect the quality of Vasco to come through and win the day, and I think you'll see that. And just going back to Flamengo, I mean, they've been so impressive. Probably most people listening to this pod and really even making it this far in the pod will know how impressive they are, have written or seen things or listened to things. And Nicolas de la Cruz has fit like a glove so far. He's been bossing the midfield, one of their best players, a standout even in a sea of stars for Flamengo. So really impressive stuff, and it doesn't hurt at all that Pedro has just found his form and just scoring goals for fun. Sebalinha as well, rekindling the relationship with Chichi. Really great stuff, and it's at this current moment, I don't see a team in the Americas that even holds a candle to them, including Palmeiras. So, just in really impressive stuff. And I almost want to say it doesn't matter who wins, Nova Iguaçu or Vasco. Flamengo is going to win this tournament, and they're going to win it easily. So we've got the second legs of those fixtures coming up very, very soon. You're right. It would really surprise me to see Fluminense do a comeback like they did last year. And that's something else that's really striking is Fernando Diniz this year has looked tired. And like you said, they've done a lot of winning already. I think there might be a little bit of a victory hangover, so to speak. And I think the fatigue has really set in, especially when you look at their striker, Hermann Cano. He did so much for them. And he's kind of getting up there in age, so I don't blame him, but we'll have to see, because they're going to be one of those really interesting teams where, again, like Botafogo, you don't really know what you're going to get on a day-to-day basis. All right, let's move it south. Campeonato Gaúcho, no surprises here. The playoff phase has started. Internacional beating up on São Luís, and Grêmio beating their opponent, Brasil de Pelotas. Diego Costa scoring, I think, two goals, two games. So that's something of note. Mauricio as well, the young winger from Inter. So nothing really all that interesting, I don't think. Juventud will face Internacional, and in a rematch of last year's final in the Campeonato Gaúcho, Grêmio versus Caxias do Sul. So some bigger matches, but again, you'd expect a Grenal in the final. And that's something that I would be definitely looking forward to, especially with all the new signings Inter has made. Enric, any comments on the Gaúcho as we keep on rolling with this pod?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think Caxias do Sul are capable of beating Grêmio like they did in that first leg of the Gaúcho final last season. And the same thing goes for Internacional. Juventud, despite them getting promoted, they're not going to be able to pass Internacional. Inter, in my opinion, we said it before, they're probably going to win this competition. And looking at Grêmio, Franco Cristaldo, your boy, Peter, it seems like he always scores in the Gaúcho. Like, I don't know what happens to this man during the Brasileirão, but we thought that he's going to be one of the biggest players, and he might have gotten one or two goals. It seems like Gaúcho, the state championship, is his thing. He scored a lot of goals that season. He's been scoring this year. I'm not sure what's up with him, but I don't think he likes to play in the Brasileirão. Maybe Serie B back in 2022 was more of like a priority for him, right?
Well, I mean, he wasn't there. He was too busy bossing it in the first division in Argentina for, I think it was Huracan. But no. I think you got to take a closer look at his stats. He had more than a few assists and more than a few goals. And I have a little spreadsheet going with some of their other more intricate stats. And he is one of the most elite passers in the game, in the Brasileirão. Less of maybe a scoring attacker, but definitely pulling the strings in the midfield. And honestly, a pretty good goal and assist tally for an attacking midfield. So I'm not going to have any of that slander here, Henrik. He shows up in both competitions. Let's move to Campeonato Mineiro. Tombense taking on Cruzeiro. Not a whole lot to say here. Two reds for Cruzeiro, and unfortunately, they're going to be out without their outside back Marlon, who was such a key part of their rigid defense last year. But I think they'll still get through. They have a home game. And Atletico taking on America, beating them 2-0 at home. So nothing too fancy there. Again, not in top gear. I'd expect Atletico to be one of the best teams in the league this coming season. But I just want to give a shout out to Hulk. He scored his 100th goal for Atletico Mineiro. He is only one of three players who have scored 100 goals for their current team right now. And he's done 100 goals in 180 appearances. The two other players are Gabigol, who scored 143 goals in 261 appearances, and Pedro, who scored 110 goals in 224 appearances for Flamengo. So two other Flamengo players, you know, Flamengo much, you know, dominating, much more dominant in the competitions throughout this period. And both of those players scoring their 100th well into their 200th appearance. Hulk does it in 180 appearances. Really impressive stuff. He was, I mean, out of his mind last season, and he was very good the two previous seasons. So crazy stats from him and really impressive stuff. He's scoring even at his kind of advanced age, hate to say it, but just a hero for Gallo. And I think one of those players that's going to go down as more iconic than I think we might have thought, given his transfer in from China a few years back now. So I'll kind of give that to you now. What do you think of Campeonato Mineiro and maybe Hulk?
I mean, Campeonato Mineiro, there's two or three teams that always pop up there, Cruzeiro and then the two Atletico Mineiro and America Mineiro. Last season, we saw this exact match take place in the final, Atletico against America, in which Atletico came on victorious. But on the playoffs so far, you look at Tombense. They played for more than 60 or more than 50 minutes with the men up against Cruzeiro and they're unable to score. And I feel like that's going to hurt them because when they play that second leg, no matter what the result will be, if it ends in a draw, Cruzeiro's up to the next stage because you look at the ranking between those two teams in the group. They were actually in the same group. Cruzeiro had 19 points, Tombense had 15. So Tombense will need to make sure that they get a winning result if they need to, if they want to advance to that final, which it's going to be very hard to say. And then you mentioned Hulk as well, a player that has been so good for Atletico Mineiro. He was good as well in Europe, but it just sucks that he never played in top five divisions. He played in Porto, he played for Zenit, and then he made the move to China. So I just wish back in his time, I wish we saw him perform in the top divisions and maybe even the Champions League, which we never did as well.
Yeah, did he not play for Porto in the Champions League? Yeah, maybe even Zenit group stages.
Yeah.
But yeah, but also I, you know what, we're kind of going back and forth, and a theme over our recent episodes has been the quality of the Brest de Reims. I would say that, you know, the French league, I'm not sure that it has the quality that the Brest de Reims and even the Portuguese league has. I mean, I would say maybe he played in a top five league in Primeira Division in Portugal. But yeah, I mean, the point is well taken. We would have loved to see him in maybe a Spanish team or even maybe dealing with the English physicality. I mean, he's such a physical player. So would have been cool to see. Would have been weird to see. But he did elect to go to China, and that's his right, man. Get your money, get your bag, and get back to Brazil and score some goals. And that's exactly what he's done.
Talking about China, did you see the news of Oscar potentially returning to Brazil? His contract is ending. And I got to say, it's got to be a long contract to be playing for more than a decade in a club. I mean, good for him. He got the money. But I don't think looking back in 5 or 10 years from now, or even more, I don't think he's going to be happy with his career. Despite how much money you get, you're still going to be disappointed and you're not going to have memories that I'm sure he spent at teams like Chelsea in the past.
Yeah, and I think it's some bad timing and then an additional bad decision to stay, because I think at the time when he left, you know, China was seen almost like Saudi Arabia. Some see Saudi Arabia now as like, okay, this is the next frontier. These are the next teams that are splashing the cash. China's going to be, even, I mean, it was a governmental program that ultimately failed. And they clamped down on the star signings. They clamped down on the high pay. And really, he's the lone star left. I mean, you think about the other stars that are in China right now. I mean, I can't really think of many off the top of my head, if any, other than Oscar. And he's stayed through thick and thin and really become a legend for his team. I can't remember even if it's Shanghai or Guangzhou. But one of those teams, they're playing red, I'll tell you that. But yeah, I mean, Eduardo Cude, manager of Inter, has come out and said one of his priorities, is his top transfer priority from here on out, is to bring Oscar back. He said it explicitly to the media. I think the club want it. I wouldn't be surprised if Oscar wants it. His boyhood club, and he's seen the success of a bunch of other players returning to their boyhood clubs and making it happen in the Brest de Reims. It's an exciting time for Inter. And like you said, I mean, he's made his money. He might look back and regret some of that, but you know, no time like the present to remedy this. And I think he's going to after the end of the Chinese Super League season. So would be awesome to see him back in that Inter kit. And yeah, I hope it happens.
Yeah, I mean, so do I. Once a red, always a red. He wore red in China. He might return back to Brazil with Internacional. So I want to watch him too. And even if he goes to Flamengo, hopefully Tite is going to give him some minutes and perform. I'm not sure if he's going to take Arrascaeta's spot. Very doubtful, but who knows? He might be one of the top players in the Brest de Reims.
For sure, for sure. With his quality, that's no doubt. All right, let's wrap up the state competitions and, of course, this episode. Campeonato Paranaense, no surprises here. Atlético Paranaense and Coritiba looking likely to progress to the final. They'll have to get through Operario and Maringa, respectively. Chapecoense failing to make to the final stages of the Santa Catarina championship. And then some big news for Brasiliense. They do make it through in the end in the DF, but it was close.
Yeah, definitely close. They conceded a goal in that first half, and the only way they would have advanced was if they drew or won, and then the other team, Paranoa, lost to Planantilla, which was a relegation side. So as soon as they went down, the situation for Brasiliense and Luisa was not good. Thankfully, they were able to win 3-1 at the end, which no matter what result Paranoa got, it saw Brasiliense qualify to the next stage. And they actually struggled in the fourth division as well last season. This is to make it to the next stages. They actually qualified fourth. So very, very tight margin there. And there was no room for error. Only a win sees them advance. They're going to be playing Capital in the next round. And the other matchup will be Ceilândia against Gama. So hopefully we get to see the big rivalry, Brasiliense against Gama, in the final. Other than that, we also had Copa do Brasil second round matches take place this past week. Atlético Goianiense, Operário, Vasco da Gama got the job done. Vasco struggled at the end by winning in late penalties against Agua Santa. Cuiabá also won in penalties. Bahia won in penalties. Sport Recife. Fortaleza last night also struggled against Retro. So all those teams fighting and getting the job done in penalty kicks. Corinthians beat São Bernardo 2-0. Brasiliense, unfortunately, did not make it through after losing in penalty kicks against Rusuma, one of the top and legendary players for the Italian national team. Ed Dair got the first goal. And I can't wait to see him perform in the first division. I want to see what he's able to do and if he's going to keep up with the pace of the first division, or will we see a player that plays one or two matches and then move on to a second or third division side, sort of like what, who was it last season? Nene, or 2 years ago from Vasco da Gama. He moves on to Juventude. And even now that Juventude advanced to the first division, I don't know if he's still there or he moved again to second division team.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Yeah, it's too bad Brasiliense couldn't get through. I know we were texting about that. One of the other highlights I thought were Corinthians beating São Bernardo. São Bernardo, obviously no slouches. We saw their campaign in Paulista. Two goals from two guys that need them. Yuri Alberto adding another one. I think he's like 5 goals in 6 games now. And Pedro Raul getting the other goal. So he's off the mark for Corinthians now. And man, they need the goals. But they've got a nice little, you know, if they can kind of get the team to assemble and get some cohesion. Pedro Raul, Yuri Alberto, Rodrigo Garo. They've got a nice little spine there going, and even a guy like Felix Torres, the Ecuadorian national, getting called to the national team today, is kind of interesting. So maybe they're going to have a difficult campaign, but I think in the future going forward, they've got a lot of nice pieces that are going to grow into some exciting players. All right, Copa Verde as well is getting underway. Brasiliense face Cuiabá. Amazonas as well are coming up into Serie B. They're making a challenge for the trophy. And Goiás as well, one of the other favorites. But Enric, let's close on this. Brasileirão Serie B fixtures coming in hot. They just got released in the last 2 weeks. And they start as well as the Serie A in April 18th. Santos, I think I texted you, probably the first 6 or 7 games, very winnable. I think we have a big chance to start the season off right with a win, hosting Paysandu. And I think if we start well, we could win this championship.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I like the fact that we're starting the Serie B in the second division, or we're starting it by playing at home against an easy team, I could say, a team that just got promoted from the third division. And it was one of the teams that I think we both wanted to get promoted. And now we get to see him play against Santos. But overall, some great matchups in that first week. We have Botafogo, Sao Paulo playing against America, Chapecoense against Ituano, and Ceará against Goiás. And ever since or from the first match week, Santos will have some easy matches. We play Avaí, another easy side, I could say. And then the first derby comes on May 2nd against Guarani. 2 weeks later, we'll be playing against Ponte Preta. So things are looking good. If I'm sure that we're going to get promoted, it's a matter of are we ending up first or second. And the thing is, I would like for us to end up first, but then in our trophy cabinet, we'll have a Serie B championship, which I don't think I'm going to be happy about. I don't know what you think about it. Do you like Santos winning that sort of second division, or just get promoted and don't win is enough for you?
Listen, for me, if I'm in a competition, I'm in it to win it. And I think that should be the mentality. If you're playing something, your objective is to win, right? So am I going to be, proudly touting this trophy on social media, you know, for years to come? Maybe not. Am I going to enjoy the moment should they win it? Sure. It'll be if now we're getting ahead of ourselves here. This could be a hilarious clip. But, you know, if they did manage to win it, I would celebrate it. And I think it's a trophy and I think it's a title, and it's a title that we've never won before because we've never even had the opportunity. And I think, it's something there to be won. And I don't think that anyone should shame the players for celebrating a trophy. It's a trophy, and it would probably be this first trophy that a lot of these Santos, supporters have seen in quite some time. I know even just since I started the Twitter account in early 2019, January 2019, I've seen no trophies. You know, it would be nice for something to celebrate. I've seen finals, I've seen amazing wins, but not a trophy. I don't think there's anything to be ashamed about winning it and celebrating it in the moment. Now, 2 years from now, am I going to be, Serie B? No, of course not. Let's win and let's get back to where we belong, Serie A.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's been a long time. I think the last trophy we won was back in 2016, the Campeonato Paulista. Yeah. But I just don't know how it would feel when you look at a team. For example, all the information that we gather for the Google Doc, I take screenshots, and I always, when I click on a team, I see all the trophies that they have won. And when you see, for example, Botafogo, you would never think that they have been in second division until you see how many times they've won it. So that just gives the people looking internet an idea of, wait a second, Santos has actually been relegated before, because in 5 or 6 years from now, nobody's going to remember that. Just like, for example, me, I don't remember Palmeiras getting relegated. I don't remember Corinthians getting relegated until I see that there. So it's just going to be weird seeing the big Brazilian club have that tournament won. So if we end up second, I'm going to be totally happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, disagree, but hey, we'll have to see how the season shakes out. I mean, Santos, obviously, I think, are probably one of the favorites to win it all, but you never know. This team can really surprise you in terms of lack of mentality, crazy administration, crazy coaching changes. So we'll have to see how it shakes out. But Enric, this is the end of the episode. So let's sign off and let's get everyone back to whatever they were doing before they were listening to this. Thank you so much if you've listened to it and you've made it this far. We'll be back very soon with more interviews, specialty episodes, and of course our standard issue episode, reviewing and analyzing the Brasileirão. But until we meet again, thank you.